It's Deanne Benavides.
Tropical Storm Harold brought sustained winds of 50 miles per hour as it slammed into the Texas Gulf Coast on Monday, knocking out power to thousands and flooding streets in Corpus Christi.
We're not standing down yet.
Jesse Gilbert, president of the Texas State Aquarium, says they've learned from past storms how to keep their animals and employees safe.
We've been through Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Hannah in the last couple of years, so those were pretty catastrophic storms in some cases. So we plan and prepare for this quite a bit.
It's been over 2 weeks since wildfires ravaged parts of Maui, and there are still more than 1,000 people missing. Police Chief John Pelletier says the search is challenging.
We're not recovering whole bodies. I think I talked about it before. We're picking up ash. Some of it's crumbling.
The death toll stands at 115. A black FedEx driver who says two white men chased and shot at him in Mississippi last year has now been fired from his job. Correspondent Jim Crisullo.
25-year-old D. Montario Gibson says he feels, quote, disrespected by FedEx after getting an email from the company about his firing. Late last week, a judge cited police errors in declaring a mistrial for the father and son charged in the attack.
UPS workers will stay on the job after they approved a new five-year contract. Cornell University labor expert Arthur Wheaton.
There were significant gains in this contract for all levels, especially for the lower tiers, ending the tiers, some important changes like Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, no forced overtime on your scheduled days off.
Well, no deal yet to get writers and actors back to work.
What do we want?
They joined forces Tuesday for a National Day of Solidarity rally outside Disney in Burbank, California. SAG-AFTRA said in a statement, "Together we're showing corporate America that when we fight, we win." Actors have been on the picket line since July. The Writers Guild has been out on strike since May the 2nd. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
I can't wait for what's next. Even with higher stroke risk due to atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem, Eliquis, apixaban tablets, reduces stroke risk. It's the number one cardiologist-prescribed blood thinner.
Don't stop taking prescription Eliquis without talking to your doctor, as this may increase your risk of stroke. Eliquis can cause serious and, in rare cases, fatal bleeding. Don't take Eliquis if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or have antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or take longer for bleeding to stop. A spinal injection while on Eliquis increases risk of blood clots, which may cause paralysis, the inability to move. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding or unusual bruising, or if you have tingling, numbness, or muscle weakness. It may increase your bleeding risk if you take medicines such as aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners. Tell your doctor about all planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR.
An excessive heat warning begins at 10 a.m. this morning and continues until 9 p.m. tonight.
Lows around 71. Overnight, under partly cloudy skies, southerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Daytime highs approaching 99. Tomorrow, mainly sunny skies. Mainly cloudy. Tomorrow night, lows around 69. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 73.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Everything is on demand now, but there's something about that appointment watching of HBO that's still there.
It's also called the art of the tease, and that's how they get you.
I'm trying to think, what's my tease for tomorrow?
Kristen sets herself on fire. Tune in at 11:20, and then we'll tell you why.
Boom.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada. Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the second hour, the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin on Tuesday, August 22nd. And it's been a minute since we talked about childcare,
yes.
But just because we haven't talked about it doesn't mean that the problem in Wisconsin has disappeared. If anything, the longer we wait to address it, the worse it is going to get for more and more families and for the people who are providing childcare. So, here to give us a bit of an update on where we are, fill us in on his big trip to the White House last month on this issue, is Wisconsin State Representative of the 79th Assembly District, which is in Dane County, Representative Alex Jors. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be here. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller, so I'm so happy to be on the show with you. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you. So I guess take us back, because this was something like we obviously when it first came down, kind of at the, 2:30 in the morning on that fateful mm-hmm. Thursday. I came into the show pretty fired up. I think Representative Hong and I had a live stream where we swore a lot more than I could on the show that day. But you also gave a pretty passionate speech about this on the House floor, as your Republican colleagues were like, yeah, no, we're not going to do this. And so where does the passion for this issue come for you? Is it personal? Is it just because of what you're hearing from your constituents?
Yeah, it's both. I mean, I look at my 3-year-old right now and I love him, but I think parents are exhausted and looking for some way to make sure that they have quality, affordable childcare and that they can go to work. And so not only is it something that I'm dealing with, but it's parents across my district and definitely across Wisconsin. As you know, I'm sure you've heard that prices for childcare are going up and the availability is not there. Over 50% of our state lives in a childcare desert. So we need to do something about it. That's why I'm so passionate about it. And I'm looking forward to talking more.
Representative, I wonder sometimes, because with the approach of some of our Republican lawmakers, do none of them have children? None of them have ever had to have daycare?
Well, I don't know why there's the disconnect. You know, I am one of the younger legislators, so I am dealing with the issue right now in my family. But I get a lot of pushback from folks that are not in favor of expanding childcare and say, well, it should just be on one parent to stay home. And I just don't think that's a reality anymore. And in fact, the facts say that 70% of Wisconsinites who have kids under the age of 6 are both working. All available parents are in the workforce. So it's not a reality. That's why we need affordable childcare in Wisconsin.
Well, and it would be interesting to see how in this, you know, we started the today's show talking about the cost of cars right now, you know, and just the cost mm-hmm. of everything, like across the board, whether it's, you know, mortgage prices, car prices, daycare, food, like the cost of living for so many things has gone up exponentially more than wages, right? And I haven't seen a cross comparison to, you know, if we think about some of the older gentlemen, because let's be honest, most of them are older gentlemen who do have kids, and maybe they did have a wife who stayed home that raised the kids, or even if they did have daycare, the childcare, if it's just less, it was less expensive because everything was less expensive. Rent was less expensive. Like the cost of living and a living wage was less expensive. And so just the actual cost of doing business and staying in business is more expensive, just like everything else right now. And even with higher wages, because like post-pandemic, it's not high enough.
Yeah. And I'll just say this, that 40% of single parents single parents spend 40% of their household income on childcare in Wisconsin. And if you look at folks that are making minimum wage, which I'll remind your listeners is $7.25 an hour, they're spending 83% of their income on childcare. So this is ridiculous, and we need to address it now.
Yeah.
That's why we need to take up the governor's bill to push for this childcare affordability.
Which we'll see what happens, but you were with the governor the day that he announced his request for a special session that is coming up in September. And so can you tell us, we haven't talked a ton about what that could look like or what he is asking for. So since you were there, can you tell us more about what, you know, hopefully maybe they won't gavel in and gavel out, but what the hope is to accomplish with that special session?
Yeah, absolutely. They should not just gavel this special session out. They should take up this issue as people have been asking for. The governor announced in Milwaukee with the Little Green Trees Daycare Center that they were going to call us in a special session on September 20th to take up a workforce package that includes the child care counts funding that my Republican colleagues stripped out. That was the paid family leave, creation of the program that we need, and then also investing in our higher education institutions. So really investing in families across the spectrum here. And I mean, I would encourage anybody who's listening to this to reach out to your legislator, even if it's me, and tell them to take up this bill on the special session day.
And that's just something that I think needs to be hammered over and over and over again. You need to call them. You need to call your representative,
right,
so they know that you are paying attention.
And even if they still, I mean, because I think that's the thing. It's like, it's hard sometimes when we give the, call your representative, and then simultaneously say, but you're also in a gerrymandered district and they don't have to listen to you, which is why we want to get rid of gerrymandering. So it's like, do it even if they don't listen to you, which is just where we're at in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. And it's helpful for me to know people's personal stories so that I can continue to remind my colleagues why this is important.
And I think that's the important thing. It's one thing to call and say, this is what I want. But we all know stories more than numbers touch hearts, right? And that's what the thing, being able to tell someone's story of I hurt. Like, I think about this when people leave me a comment in one of my videos or they write into the show and stuff of like, a personal story always means more. And then when there's an accumulation of personal stories, that means even more to be able to like take that and actually wrap your head around it versus 80% and percentages and numbers and stuff like that. So, well, on top of the special session that's happening next month, last month, you got to go to the White House to talk about this with other state-led lawmakers from across the country. So are you still reeling from that opportunity? Or are you excited? Like, what was that like?
It was very exciting to be at the White House with folks across the country. It was exciting, but also when I was talking with my colleagues from across the country, it is very different in a lot of other states. There are states like New Mexico that are doing a great job funding early education from 0 to 3. And even our state next to us, Minnesota, just made great investments in their child care and early education workforce. So, you know, I want Wisconsin to follow that lead, but it was exciting to be there, but it is clear that we have work to do.
And when you talk to people from representing different states where they are making progress in this, like, have you asked them what worked as far as like objection handling. And like for the naysayers who are like, well, if you can't afford it, don't have kids, or, you know, all of the people when it comes to this issue who are on the other side of it and who aren't quite comprehending the like economic argument of people, we want people in the workforce. We have a workforce shortage. Like, we want women back in the workforce. Like, all of the things as far as why this is good to invest in, this is good for everyone, especially even future generations of having kids, you know, have, because it's not just babysitters, right? This is like child education, early child education is that, it's education. And so did you get much insight on like how they overcame the people who didn't want to do this?
Sure. I mean, even in Alabama, they were speaking about the business community and larger industries that, like you said, are looking for workers. Yeah. They need people to work. And so the argument of like, well, parents should just stay home, that should be the answer, and we'll move along. If we want folks to enter the economy, and, you know, usually it's folks with young kids, this is what we need to do. We need to invest in early education and make sure that kids from 0 to 6 or even past that into higher education are invested in each state. And that's how we do it.
So we just keep hammering it home, I guess. I guess in the conversations you've had, if there is in the special session next week, and we only got 2 minutes left, if they do gavel in and gavel out, what's plan B?
I mean, like you said, I'm just going to keep talking about it. Okay. And I know some people are going to get annoyed by me continuing to push this, but, you know, my constituents are wanting me to say this, and people across Wisconsin are wanting us to address this in our legislature. And you know what? I think that my colleagues in the Republican Party are going to start hearing more and more about this. I just look at Lancaster, that is represented by Senator Mark Lyne, who just had a childcare facility close. Parents are going to be frustrated with their legislatures across the country and across Wisconsin if they don't address this. So yeah, we're going to keep talking about it.
And there's a chance that everyone's up for re-election next fall, depending on what happens with this redistricting case.
Wouldn't
so maybe they would
something
actually have to listen.
Shocking.
Yeah, they need to listen.
They need to listen. All right. Well, Representative Alex Jors is the state representative of the 79th Assembly District in Dane County. It was so great to finally meet you. Welcome. You're welcome to come back to the show anytime. And thank you for continuing to talk about this.
I'll be back. It was so fun, and I'll keep listening.
We appreciate that. Call in. Just call in on a random Tuesday. All right. Have a great day. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
I've been waiting so long. When you gonna fight? When you gonna satisfy me? When you gonna buy me canned ham? I've been waiting so long.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matt-Nair. And there's very few things I miss more that I can't eat right now than sushi.
Oh, really?
That's the thing. Deli meats, kind of. Mostly because the convenience of just getting a sub from, like, Jimmy John's or whatever.
Right, yep.
But it's not like I'm like, oh, man, I'm craving that. I'm sad I can't have a turkey sandwich. But sushi, I do like sushi. So that's been the joke that like Mike is going to bring me a sushi boat into the hospital.
And after she comes.
But here is, but I'm not snobby, but I worked at a sushi restaurant when I lived in Los Angeles, and we had really good fresh fish.
So, you know, from sushi.
So I like sushi. Like, I like I don't like a ton, like, sauces on it. I don't like it mixed with, like, a bunch of avocado and stuff like that. Like, I like pieces of sushi and sashimi versus rolls. And so then you need to have pretty good fish in order to enjoy that. But it turns out most Americans, not that snobby about their sushi.
That's so, kind of scary.
So listen to this. Kroger, which we know is like the massive, they own Metromark, they own Pick and Save. I'm pretty sure they own, depending on where you are regionally, they own that something. Grocery store.
Yep.
Kroger is the biggest purveyor of sushi in the country.
Wow. Wow.
It sells more than 40 million pieces of sushi per year, according to the Wall Street Journal. Isn't that crazy?
They must have a good sushi team or something.
And apparently people are... I have always been like, that's a place where it's like, I will get an avocado roll. I will get something that is like sushi adjacent that doesn't actually have fish in it. But apparently people are buying it from there and not getting sick, that they keep buying it from there. But the company realized it was number one back in 2020. And in the past 3 years, ramped up its sushi offerings to claim even more market share. But it's not just Kroger. Grocery stores across the U.S. are basically investing in and benefiting from consumers choosing like a $9 California roll over something else that they would buy as far as like an easy lunch to go to the grocery store and grab. And then in general, sushi sales at U.S. retailers has risen more than 70% in the past year.
Wow.
So I guess maybe I'll have to, I guess grocery store sushi, not so bad.
Soon, coming to a gas station near you.
That's the thing. It's also like, when do you, like, when, like, at what point you're like,
again, it's just, boy, if you do it wrong, or you have old fish, this can be bad.
And I guess if they're taking, now that it's like, this builds a little bit more confidence as far as being, thinking like, well, they know that they're selling this much, so they're investing in it actually being pretty good. But I don't know, making that kind of mass quantities of it also feels like a dangerous game when it comes to raw fish.
I mean, that's not something you can repackage for the next day.
No.
Right?
No. You're eating your sushi.
It's got to be fresh.
And unless it's like something that's like a tempura roll. But none of that stuff is as good the next day anyways.
Right.
But are you a sushi person?
Not a chance.
None?
No. I did many years ago. I was with friends, I want to say, in Boston. And I did a piece of tuna, which I think I swallowed whole.
Wait, you didn't chew it?
No, I just swallowed it.
Choke?
No. And then I had a California roll with a little teeny piece of something in the middle, and that was fine. It was a veggie roll-up.
What is it about it that you're just...
It's raw.
Do you not eat cannibal sandwiches?
No.
Do you eat steak tartare?
No. Ugh. Blew.
So
I'm really picky.
Are you a picky eater?
Well, I'm a baby. I don't like exotic things. I don't like, you know, no.
Okay.
No.
Can't. You're like my dad. I remember the first time was when my dad and I were living in L.A. For that first, like, jaunt. And he had friends in San Diego, so we drove down to San Diego. And we went to dinner. We went to a sushi restaurant. Like, we went to a restaurant where there was more stuff. And there usually is. Like, sushi restaurants, there you can get teriyaki and chicken teriyaki
and stuff
like that.
Things that they actually cook.
Things that you actually cook. And he's a picky eater. And I just remember, and I had never met these friends before because they lived in California, but they were his age. And I just remember the woman bullying him.
Oh, really?
Just bullying him into trying a piece of like hamachi, like sashimi that had probably like a jalapeno or something on that. And she's, come on, Pete. Just come on, Pete. Like, just try it. Just try it. And I just will never forget. And I think he finally, because we were the guests, was like, fine. And so he just like took the one and then she shut up and he moved on. But I don't think he enjoyed it.
Don't be a food bully. Come on.
And so yeah, you and Pete can have your plain rice with your potatoes and your bland chicken. And
that works for me.
Oh, all right. Well, we're going to take another break. But when we come back, we are going to talk to Wisconsin author Beth Amos about her journey to becoming an author, but also she has a book that came out last year, Death in Door County. She's got another one coming out in December. So talking about making Wisconsin a character and a backdrop for mystery novels. And so stick around. We will be back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I've been waiting so long.
From Alexander Field to the Central Business District, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
A new head coach.
We got one objective and one goal, is to play for a championship.
A talented backfield.
Braylon Allen does it again.
And a defense that just...
down he goes. Intercepted. He's gone.
Stop.
Another turnover forced.
Join us Saturday, September 2nd. It's the Badgers and Buffalo Bulls in Madison. Our coverage begins at 12:30 on your home for Wisconsin football.
It's about effort. It's about intensity.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver, and we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. My Grandpa Lou is the reason why my dad and I started racing, and I'm really proud to follow in his tracks. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. I've learned a lot on this journey with my Grandpa Lou, and the memories of my grandpa will always be with me. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Talking about Alzheimer's can be really tough, but if you notice something, have a conversation with your loved one. Encourage them to see a doctor or offer to go with them. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. The Alzheimer's Association provides care, support, and research to help you take control of the situation with your family and manage the disease together. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time-to-talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
I'm John O'Hurley, and I support Paralyzed Veterans of America because our heroes have sacrificed so much for our independence.
I had just come home. I had noticed my legs were swollen. Next thing I know, it was 3 weeks later. I was paralyzed. PVA has brought me back to life.
While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. It left me paralyzed. I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
For more than 75 years, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to never leave a fallen hero behind. That's why Paralyzed Veterans of America is providing specialized medical care, life-changing treatments, benefits our heroes earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need. Our paralyzed veterans have helped us live the lives we enjoy today. It's our turn to give them the best lives possible. To learn more, go to PVA.org today.
The Central Wisconsin State Fair is underway in Marshfield. And for nationally touring rock and country entertainers to the Midway and exhibits, it's great fun for everyone. It's also where you can check out the world's largest round barn. Built in 1915 as a show and sale arena, this beautiful building is still being used the same way today. And be sure to look for the Civic Media Truth Booth, your chance to tell us your thoughts about the fair, the area, and issues concerning to you. The Central Wisconsin State Fair runs through Sunday in Marshfield.
Childhood should be the happiest time of life, but for many children living in poverty with blindness, facial deformities, and other crippling conditions, it's riddled with pain, rejection, shame, and isolation. At Mercy Ships, we're answering the cries of some of the world's most forgotten children and adults through free, life-changing surgeries, surgeries that turn despair into hope. These once heartbroken boys and girls, and many men and women too, are now restored, accepted, and on their way to a life of opportunity and joy. No one can change the world on their own, but together we can transform it by restoring hope to one person, one child at a time. Volunteers from your community and around the globe are bringing life-changing healing and hope to the forgotten poor. To learn how you too can help change the world, one child at a time, go to mercyships.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. An excessive heat warning begins at 10 a.m. this morning and continues until 9 p.m. tonight. Lows around 71 overnight under partly cloudy skies, southerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Daytime highs approaching 99, tomorrow mainly sunny skies. Mainly cloudy, tomorrow night lows around 69. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 73.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. A Wisconsin bookstore owner and cryptozoologist is asked to investigate a series of deaths that just might prove a fabled lake monster is real. With her rescue dog, Newt, by her side, Morgan goes on a hunt, but if she's not careful, she could be the next victim. That is the short description of the first installment of a new mystery series by USA Today bestselling author and our guest right now, Wisconsin author Beth Amos. How are you doing, Beth?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Glad to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you on the show. So that is, as of, I just saw on your Facebook page, as of August 10th, death in Door County has become a USA Bet Today bestseller as of last week.
Correct. That
congratulations.
Is correct.
Yes.
Congratulations. That's so
Thank
exciting.
You.
Wow.
It is, yeah.
And so it was about a decade ago that the last time you made that list, right? So which book was that for?
It was for a book called, trying to remember for sure which one. I think it was Lucky Stiff. It was one of the Maddie Winston books, and actually the publisher had put it on sale, and that prompted a bunch of sales, which managed to get it onto the list a little higher up on, no, I mean, a little lower, I guess, on the list than this one hit, and it was my first time hitting, so that was fun, but yeah, it's been 10 years or more, I think, since that happened, so this was exciting.
That's very exciting. So before we jump into the different series that you've done, the different pseudonyms you've written under. Just tell us a little bit more, because you're based in Wisconsin. Kind of your journey to becoming like a mystery novelist?
Well, I actually started out as a medical freelancer with my writing career. I was a nurse, and I always wanted to do writing and read a lot. And so I managed to segue some of my writing interests at the hospitals that I worked at into writing articles for their magazines and things like that. And that business grew. That was when I lived in Virginia. And then I ended up once I sold my very first book, which was actually a Dean Koontz type of book, not so much a mystery, but more of a thriller, a paranormal thriller, I decided to step away from nursing for a few years and focus on my writing, and made enough money off of my freelance work for probably about 6 years to stay away from nursing. But I kind of missed it and the camaraderie of working with those folks. And I had an idea for a new series that I wanted to do. And my first three books, all of which were Dean Koontz type paranormal thriller books with HarperCollins. Before the third book came out, HarperCollins did some shifting around in the whole publishing industry back then. This was in the late 90s, was kind of worried about what was happening with ebooks, and they were just, there was a lot of merging going on and selling going on, and a lot of authors were getting shifted around and dropped, and I was one of the people that got dropped from HarperCollins. So, and then about a year and a half later, my agent got frustrated and she decided to retire and leave the business. So my writing career kind of came to a screeching halt, and I had another project I was working on where I wanted to use the humor of the medical people that I've worked with over the years, because they're just some of the funniest people that I've ever encountered. You need to have a sense of humor to work in the medical field.
Yeah,
that it's kind of a dark sense of humor at times, but I wanted a way to utilize that in my writing, and I kept trying to make sort of a funny mystery series, and I had it set in Virginia because that's where I lived at the time when I started writing it, and it just wasn't working. And then I moved to Wisconsin, and as I got to know Wisconsin, I rewrote the book and put it in Wisconsin, because Wisconsin's just quirky enough and strange enough and weird enough that it all worked. And funny enough. I mean, people in Wisconsin are funny, too. They have great senses of humor. And I had gone back to work in nursing, working in the emergency department, which is a great source for characters and plots and all kinds of things. So eventually, I got that first book written. It took me a while to find another agent. Fired one, had one, and fired him in the process. So it was about 8 years, I think, in between my third book with Harper coming out and the first book with this new series coming out. And that was at with Kensington, which is a New York publisher, but a smaller family-owned publisher. And I had to come up with a new name to publish under, because my own name, Beth Amos, was now dirt, because my third book with HarperCollins hadn't sold very well because they dropped me before it came out. So they didn't do anything to market it or, you know, sell. I mean, they basically did nothing. So the sales were terrible, and book buyers have very long memories, apparently. So they wanted me to come up with a pseudonym to publish under, market me, newly discovered author. Plus, I was working in the ER at the time, and I really didn't, my character is a, you know, solving mysteries, and I didn't want my patients knowing that I spent my spare time thinking up fun ways to kill people. So it seemed like a pseudonym was a good idea. And I came up with Annalise Ryan because my son's name is Ryan and my middle name is Ann, and it was going to be initially just Ann Ryan, but they said that was too common. They wanted something a little more unique. So Annalise was my name in German class in high school. So I said, okay, Annalise Ryan. And they liked that. And Annalise Ryan was born. And she's doing much better in her career than Beth Amos is. So
that is so, but then there's also Allison Abbott. Right?
Well, there is, because, yes, about five books into my Annalise Ryan, Maddie Winston series, the nurse who goes to work for a coroner in a small town in Wisconsin, my editor there said, you know, I've always envisioned a series that takes place in a bar, kind of like a Cheers setting with, you know, characters that are recurring and they can solve mysteries. And he said, can you put something together like a proposal for me? And I said, sure. So I did. And he loved it. And then he said, you know, we love it and we're going to contract for a couple of books in this. And there's just one little catch. We need you to come up with a new name and a new pseudonym. And I was like, why? And he said, because Annalise Ryan and the Maddie Winston series was about five books in and they weren't sure yet if it was going to take off or if it was going to tank. And then they didn't want the Annalise Ryan series to affect the new series. And they didn't want the new series, if it tanked, to affect the Annalise Ryan series. And they wanted another newly discovered author that they could pitch out there. So this time I got a little more strategic with my pseudonyms. And I know that if you go in a bookstore and you walk up to the mystery section, all of the A's are on the top shelf at eye level. Very easy to find and grab. I know that because Beth Amos was up there with one little book, and then V.C. Andrews had the whole rest of the shelf. But anyway, I was up there. And V.C. Andrews was dead at that point, but still writing. So I decided I was going to pick a last name that started with A. And so I came up with Abbott, A-B. That's pretty close to the front. And then I got a little sly about it and came up with a first name and a middle initial so that the initials for the whole thing were A.K.A., since it was another pseudonym.
Yeah.
That was my little inside joke. And my editor got it right away. The minute I sent him the email with the new name, he sent an email back 30 seconds later and said, "Nice little trick. I love it." And so that's how Allison K. Abbott became born. And that series was a 6-book series, kind of planned that way, and then ended. So Allison K. Abbott's not writing anything anymore at this point. But Annalise Ryan went on to write 12 books in the Maddie Winston series, plus a 2 spinoff books from that series. And then Kensington decided that they weren't going to do any more of those books. And I was once again back at square one and trying to relaunch my career. So I spent the year of COVID writing a book that I thought my agent was really going to love, something different. I thought this is a chance to exercise my writing muscles and use some of the plots that I've been storing away. And so I wrote this book that I thought my agent was just going to love, and he absolutely hated it. And so... So I ended up shelving it, and it took place in Door County, and I had done a lot of research in Door County because I vacation up there a lot, and I decided when we were talking on the phone and deciding not to do anything with the book he hated, we started brainstorming, and we came up with the idea. He said, "Well, you know, what kind of things do you like, you know?" And I said, "Well, I like books, and I like the X-Files, and I like, you know, that kind of stuff." And that's how we kind of came about the idea of a death in Door County. And so Wisconsin, as it turns out, has plenty of cryptids that we can play with and move around the state with. So yeah, that's how the series got started.
If you're just joining us, we are talking to Beth Amos, aka Annalise Ryan, aka Allison Abbott, who is a Wisconsin author. And so that is what I actually think is fascinating, because the story is cryptozoologist and bookstore. It's also funny because I feel like ER nurse and author. Like you said, when you got to Wisconsin, like, what is it about Wisconsin, like, that was so different from Virginia that it itself is a character in itself that is ripe to write about?
Well, when I lived in Virginia, I lived in a bigger city. I lived in Richmond. The culture there is very much still the North versus the South. There's people there that still think we're fat and the woe of Northern aggression. And it just has a different feel to it. And when I moved to Wisconsin, I moved into a very small town, like so many in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
full of small towns. And there's a lot of rural farmland around. And there were things, you know, in the newspaper, like you'd read the police blotter, and it would be, you know, somebody getting ticketed for parking their tractor at the local bar, or a cow running loose down Main Street, or the number of bars there are in town is compared to the number of churches, and it's just the whole cheesehead thing, and unfortunately some of the alcohol culture. It's very quirky and different, and it's friendly, super friendly. People are very friendly here. And that was very different from where I came from in Virginia. But I had lived in other small towns, and I think it was as much the small town setting as the Wisconsin setting.
And so with the book, so A Death in Door County, and then with, like, how does that go? And like, how is that inspired then the next book that's coming out in December?
Well, the next book is actually taking place in Bayfield, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Up around Lake Superior in the Apostle Islands.
I love Bayfield.
The Shawamigan Forest. Yeah, it's beautiful up there. And there's a lot of Bigfoot traditions and lore up there. And so Bigfoot will be the second cryptid that we're going to explore. And I'm already contracted and working on book 3, which will... be taking place in Rhinelander. Can you guess what that cryptid's going to be?
Is it maybe going to be the Hodag?
Yeah, it's going to be a Hodag. So, yeah.
So wait, what's
you would do well in my cryptid trivia.
So what is the cryptid in Lake Michigan?
I guess you'll have to read the book. To find out.
That's fair, but Bigfoot, Hodag, but the mystery.
It's based on. If you can see this, the Loch Ness monster.
Okay. Yes. So I did not know that about Lake Michigan.
There are cryptids in all of the Great Lakes. There are myths and rumors and stories. They have different names here and there, but there's all kinds of cryptid stories in the Great Lakes. And given their geographical structure, it's certainly possible that something is existing down there in the depths. And we just haven't seen it yet or haven't identified it yet.
That is awesome. So you're enjoying writing for Morgan. Morgan Carter is the main hero in this series. It's a little different than Maddie was in your last series, but it seems like she has many adventures ahead of her.
She indeed does. Yes. Her and her dog, Newt. She doesn't go anywhere without Newt. So, yeah.
Great dog name. All right. Well, we have to let you go because we're running up against the break. But Beth, this was so fascinating. I have so many more questions about the pseudonym thing, but I'll have to ask you offline because that is like, I didn't know that existed in, they're like, no, we need you to be a new person so we can sell this book. Thanks. And so
yeah, it does make marketing a challenge.
Absolutely. So A Death in Door County is available now. Death in the Dark Woods will be available in December. Beth Amos, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Have a great day. All right, we'll be back after the break. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. News, talk, and sports from Vesper to Plover.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair, and it is going to be hot this week, where you are.
Dangerously hot.
Much of Wisconsin is going to have a heat index above 100 this week, and specifically for tomorrow and Thursday, likely the hottest days of the year, they're expecting.
Oh, yeah.
So be careful.
I mean, we're talking about 111... 113. That's not the actual temperature, but that's what the heat index is going to feel like with the humidity and everything. So these are crazy, crazy temperatures. First and foremost, if you work outside, and I'm sure you already know this, but you got to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Mailmen, roofers. I just think of all the people who landscapers.
Yeah. FedEx worker, like it's
exactly.
so many people that like when you can't actually just, but also I saw something yesterday. I think Todd Elbo talked about this on his show yesterday. There's certain, because of the landlord laws, there's still like there's landlords who can forbid you from having an air conditioning unit.
Oh man.
And so there's certain people who just don't, we say like we're lucky enough to work in an air conditioned building, live in an air conditioning home. But there's a lot of people who still don't have air conditioning and like just have to rely on fans. Or maybe tomorrow's a good day to go see Barbie if you haven't seen it.
Go
yet.
See Barbie, go to a library.
Yeah.
Go take a long, long, long grocery shopping trip.
Yeah.
Just to get out of the heat. And it's the same warnings, but I think there's value in repeating them. Don't take your dog with you tomorrow.
Don't leave your dog in the car.
Don't leave your dog in the car. Honestly, they can suffocate in minutes when it's this hot. Same with children and the elderly.
Yeah.
So if you have an elderly neighbor or an elderly relative and you know they don't have air conditioning, you need to check on them to make sure that they're going to be okay.
Well, and I just feel so lucky because I had a friend who asked me who lives in, well, they just moved from Houston to Rio de Janeiro, but that's a, yeah, that's a big, big jump. But she was saying, obviously, because they're on the other side of the equator, getting used to, you know, what is winter for them right now is still not really winter, but she's used to the humidity because they lived in Houston for the last, whatever, 10 years.
And Houston's built on a big swamp.
Mm-hmm. And, but she asked, she's like, how's Wisconsin been with the heat? Like, have you guys had the same heat as Texas? And I was like, absolutely not. And, you know, I do feel fortunate that we have like 2 days of this versus so much of the South that is, this has been their whole summer.
Can you imagine?
Week just day after day, right, over like 110 degrees.
And week after week after week. And I think it might have been a day that you were gone, Kristen. But in Arizona, the ERs were getting overwhelmed with people burning themselves.
Oh, you told me. Yeah, we talked about this. Yeah. When they fell on the sidewalk.
Right. It's just crazy.
And, you know, I don't want to end necessarily on a
downer,
but it is, it's like if you track this summer and, you know, this over the weekend, it was the tropical storm Hillary with the hurricane that hit Southern California. We're dealing with the Maui wildfires. And we've had like these heat domes like across the country. But just a reminder that hurricane season basically starts now. So we're not even through what will be inevitably probably more natural disasters that are coming for the fall.
Yeah.
So
it's all related, folks.
Speaking of which, have you seen how hot it is in Europe where you're going to be going as of Thursday? Have we talked about that?
Not really. London looks a little chilly, upper 60s, lower 70s. It can really vary when you're in London because they've had some heat as well and a little rain. So, but again, that's London. It's an island.
It is an island.
It is an island.
Let's talk more. Let's actually end on a happier note. Let's talk about your trip because this is the last day I'm going to see you until September 12th.
Yes.
Which is the longest time you and I have gone without seeing each other.
In over a year.
Maybe even more than that, because before we were at the same place and I saw you daily.
At least, right.
For like a year and a half.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my God, what am I going to do?
You will have Greg Bach.
I will have Greg
you
Bach.
Will have
tell
Greg
people
Bach.
About your fun vacation that you're finally taking.
Yeah, we are going to London for about 3 days, and then we're going to go to Dubrovnik in Croatia.
Ooh.
Where they filmed some parts of Game of Thrones. So it's a very, very ancient city. It's one of those old walled-in cities. We like old rocks, my husband and I.
Okay.
We like climbing on old rocks and looking at old rocks and talking about the history of the rocks. And I've talked to several people who have been to Dubrovnik, and they have all said that 3 days is about enough.
Okay.
And then we are going to the Algarve area of Portugal, which is like the southern coastline of Portugal, for about 9. So we try to do our educational portion of the trip, because when we're in London, we'll probably go to the National Portrait Gallery.
Okay.
I haven't been back there for many, many years. And we like to hit some museums and do some cultural things and try and learn some things. And then for the second half, we're beach slugs.
That's nice. That's really nice.
Yeah.
But this is your first time leaving the country since COVID, right?
Since 2019. That was our last vacation was in 2019.
So that's got to be pretty exciting. Are you nervous at all after, are you feel out of practice?
Well, I can remember back in the day when flying was actually fun. And flying hasn't been fun for a long time. Now it's just a pain in the neck.
What do you mean by fun?
There wasn't so much waiting. You didn't have to be there 3 hours ahead of time. You didn't have to wait in, although we have TSA pre-check and all that stuff, so we can get through some of the lines a little bit faster.
Well, and also I'm assuming he's not a U.S. citizen, that he's still a...
He's a great citizen.
Yeah. So you guys can skip through those lines once you're entering Europe.
Into England, yep. And there's always the chance that one of my fellow passengers is going to lose their you-know-what, and I'm going to have to duct tape them to their seat.
Well, have you not been on a plane since 2020 at all?
No.
So you haven't really, So you've only seen how, you only seen nuts stories people. Of how nuts.
Oh, nuts people are.
I would say in my, the handful of flights I've taken since 2020, there's only been one time that someone was
nuts.
So you don't assume that that's going to happen. It's one of those things where the reporting of it is maybe not proportionate to like how the percentage of it is actually still quite small.
Well, okay, I'll take that. I still think if it's going to happen, it's going to happen on our flight right next to me.
It might.
I'll have duct tape. I'll be good.
There you go. Yeah, just make sure it's in your carry-on.
It's all good.
All right. Well, tomorrow we will be on site. Well, Jane will be in the studio. I will be on site with Greg Bach at Whitetail, broadcasting live from downtown Milwaukee, doing a lot of debate stuff. Excited to hear your thoughts on what you want to hear. What moves the needle for you? Are you going to watch it all? But we will do that tomorrow. Make sure you tune in. We've got a lot of fun coming up tomorrow. It's going to be a big day. So thank you for our guests today. Thank you to everyone who made it such a great show and calling in and texting in. And we'll be back tomorrow. This has been As It Goes, Wisconsin.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
How do you locate a support group, professional association, or local organization? United Way's 211 will provide the answers to these questions and more. 211 is your connection to programs and services in Central Wisconsin. Dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In this ever-changing world, it is often hard to find the program or service you're looking for. United Way's 211 can assist you locating services. 211 is free and confidential. Trained referral specialists will help you get connected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. Every day, people begin a difficult and sometimes desperate search for programs that can provide assistance. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, call United Way's 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. With thousands of programs in the database, they can assist you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211.
Emergency medical unit, respond to 102 Maple Avenue, possible stroke victim.
When stroke occurs, you have 60 minutes to win or lose the race of your life. There are new treatments, but you must get to a hospital fast. If you suddenly feel weakness on one side, have trouble speaking, walking, or seeing, it could be a stroke. Call 911. Get to a hospital. Because how you spend the next 60 minutes could determine how you spend the rest of your life. Stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. A message from the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
Smiles are powerful. They spread joy, laughter, and hope. But not everyone gets a fair chance at a smile. Every 3 minutes, a baby is born with a cleft, making it difficult to talk, hear, eat, and even breathe. In America, most children with clefts receive immediate care, but others around the world may never have access to the surgery they need to thrive. Smile Train is changing that. As the world's largest cleft charity, our sustainable model has sponsored more than 1.5 million smiles. We offer training and financial support to local medical professionals so they can provide life-changing surgery and other essential services at no cost to families.
It's more than to see these children, to hear the difference that we make. And for me, being born with a cleft lip and palate, knowing what they went through is so life-changing for me.
Help us change the world one smile at a time. To learn more, visit smiletrain.org/learn.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM, and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Locally grown radio is 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington. The heat is on. Temps throughout the middle of the country have been soaring.
Black Cat Ice Cream Shop is closed, not for good, just until the heat dome lifts over Des Moines, Iowa. Owner Alex Carter says this kind of heat and humidity can take a toll on his ice cream equipment.
When they get really hot consistently for days and days, they'll start to break down. And if they break down, that's a huge problem, of course, for an ice cream shop.
With people often staying inside when it's this hot, Carter says his business tends to see a drop-off of about 20%. So they're going through a cooling down period themselves and hoping to reopen on Friday. Jennifer Kuiper, CBS News.
Heavy rain caused major flooding and evacuations near the Grand Canyon. Highway 64 was shut down as water reached levels of 3 feet deep. Well, still over 1,000 people unaccounted for after the deadly wildfires in Maui. And officials are asking anyone with missing loved ones to bring DNA samples to help identify remains. DNA expert Julie French.
The samples are only being used for the sole purpose of comparison to this disaster and the